session number 9535, reel 8.
Mr. George Cole, Reel 8. Now, some of the stories you've told, including the last one, your friends seem to have been very important to you, and also you seem to have enjoyed some of the times you had out there. Could you talk about that a little?
Well, yes, it's funny. You get some of one another, you got more attached to one another, and you're real pals. You don't meet them these days, no, like that. You could trust one another, and you're dependent on him, he dependent on you. So you're really, really pals, I say. Any trouble, if a little bit, you'll share it. And it was wonderful there. And doesn't matter what it was, you'll share and you'll be fair to one another and look after one another. And It took some explaining, like, but this present day, you never feel a comradeship to what used to be in them days. One time when we had the Russian, the party went up, and they got hit during the night. Jerry must have started stopping, and they come back, and some were injured, and this, that, other. Even the sergeant major was there among them, helping to square them up, say. Which normally he wouldn't have done, say, but you forgot rank, you forgot everything when it was a case like that, say.
Would you have one special friend like this, Billy?
Yeah,
or
I had one. We worked together at the same quarry. We worked together down the pit as lads, and unbeknownst to one another, we joined up. Billy Knapp, they call them. And somehow or another, and we played together as kids at the same harbour. And we didn't know, and we both joined up more or less the same together. Well, we got to Low Fell, and rather remarkable, we got that they were picking the body of men out to go out as first reinforcements for the first line that had gone to France. And Billy was picked along with me. We went to France together, and anyway, I remember we went down to Southampton to embark. And on the road down to Southampton, in Jones, Southampton, a thing happened there, I'll never forget that. There was a woman run off the pavement and said a total saying to me, she put her arms on my neck and gave me a kiss. And she said, God bless you. And I also thought that, I reached through the wall, thought of that woman. And when we were on the boat, I remember night time, it was getting dusk, and it went dark. We could see the flash. It must have been from Portsmouth, the flashing of the lights. And Billy Knapp, and the one to overlook him, was saying, and he started singing that song, Homeland. And anyway, he never got back. He was killed at Harris. But when we were at Harris, we got separated, see, just for the one deal. The Sergeant Major telling me to get away at the Army Service Corps to relieve a man that was going on a compassionate leave, just in a flash. He could have told Billy to go instead of me, see? And anyway, he started changing my dress. I knew I was there only for 10 days. So I used to walk over to the battery each night and get any letters that come and come back. And the second night I went over, there's a proper calm, something, you know, some feeling there. And one of them says, have you heard about Billy George? Well, there was only one Billy, that was Billy Knapp, see. No, I said, what's the matter? And he hardly dirt, he said, he's been killed. And the first time we were separated, he was killed. See? And the remarkable thing was that I was thought of a lot about him. After years after, when I live near where I'm living now, the missus joined the one of these over 60 clubs. And they went down to the same harbour one night. They were so-called entertaining. And I took her down in the car and I left her at Rock House. Then I went for an hour's walk while they were enjoying themselves. Eh? So later on, I came back to pick her up to fetch her home. And oh, she says, "Just a minute, George." She says, "I want you to meet somebody." Oh, I says, "Who is it?" She says, "Just a minute, see." So anyway, she showed out this chap, see. He says, "Here, will you come here?" And, oh, he says, "Right on, Mrs. Cole," see. So earlier on the night, she'd heard them talking to one among them, and heard them say, "Mr. Knapp," see. So she went up to him. She says, "Excuse me, they call you Knapp." He says, "Yes." She says, "And you're a brother killed in the First War?" He stood. He says, "Yes." He says, "My wife said, did they call him Billy Knapp?" He says, "That's right, the Billy." He says, "How was that?" Well, she says, "Wait till George comes down." She says, he says, "George?" I says, "Yeah." I says, "That's my husband, see." So she shouted me over, and she says, "This is Mr. Knapp." I said, "They call you Knapp?" He says, "Yes." I said, "Really? Was Billy Knapp your brother?" He says, "Yes, did he now?" I said, "You're my best mate." And it was the same fella. And the wife said, "I was always talking about Billy and I, say. And I met his brother, and he used to live along here. And I knew him right up when he died, say." And it was just through the wife hearing him saying, "Billy Knapp, say. Knapp, say." And he died a few years ago, say. We were very good friends, say. And...
Did it affect you very badly at the time when your friend died, or was it later on?
I was never the same for a long time. Because, we were kids together, see? And played, we worked together down the pit, and we were together. Some or another of the house had to be together, see? And then he was killed, and just like that.
Did it make you very lonely after he was killed, or did you make a new friend?
I met him, but still, even now, there's only one, Billy Knapp.
So getting back into the mainstream, what happened after Flair's?
Well, with Flair's, after that, we went up there very long, and then we went out actually, the division went out all together. And I remember the thrust was still on, very hard, and we went back to a place called Corby, something like Corby, and that's where we had our Christmas dinner. The officers stumped up, and we had a proper Christmas dinner at Corby, see? And I remember one night we were in the billet, and it was upstairs, we had a ladder to climb upstairs in a loft of some kind, saw on the floor, and luxury to what it was being used to. And we had a brazier and we had a fire. And I laughed one time, we were getting short of firewood, say. So, anyway, while I'd been knocking about the village, I'd spotted this lump of wood in the yard. So I says to one of the chaps, I says, "Hey," I says, "come on with me." I says, "I want you." He says, "What for?" I says, "Come on." I says, "Nate talking." I says, "I went around with me, say." So him and me went together and we walked through the village. And he said, "Well, go on." I said, "Be quiet, man." So anyway, I went away and walked into this big yard. There's this long button of wood. I'll be about 10 or 12 feet long, see. And I says, "Come on, get out of there." He started laughing. "Come on," I said, "and they talking." So up this thing on the old rocks. and away I went through the village and hurried back to the where old Billet was, eh? And I said, how can I get some saws? So every gun had a saw on the gun, on the shield, in a proper leather case, see? Eh? Grazed, always had to be kept grazed and clean and ready for action, see? Eh? So I popped across the gun park and got a couple of saws. We set them with saw these interfaces about 9 or 10 inches long, see? Got a billy out of here, split them down out there, then buried them in the straw, and that was all supply of firewood for long enough. I've often thought, I wonder what the man belonging in the yard thought, wondering where he's planking the gun door, see? And another time at Braincourt, there's some long beam, like long branches, straight branches, and we were gradually cutting them off and starting them up for firewood, see? And the whole madam come in and she was playing war, and we were calling everybody else brigands, see? And but anyway, unbeknownst, we were sawing these woods up and using them. We did all the queerest tricks in the world. Why, it was for our comfort, see? And
where did you go from there?
And we went from there, from Corby, we did the trick, and we went down on the Perone front. And we relieved a French 75 battery.
When would that be?
That would be about, say, about March or something. February or March, 1917, say. And we went down to Corby, and then we went down onto the Perone front. And the place where we were at was a place called Estrees. And we relieved the French 75 battery. And oh, they had some wonderful dugouts. Some big trees and everything, and luxury to what ours had been.
Can you describe them in more detail, the dugouts? What did they look like?
Big pardon?
What did the dugouts look like?
Oh, they'd been built as if they never intended movement, see? Always used to be a makeshift just to keep the wet out or something like that, but there were strong dugouts, and I remember exactly how I was put on guard for the first night. And of course, it was our duty to wake the others up in the morning. And we're scouting the boat, and I come across the officers where they dumped all the officers' equipment and room. And my mate made a face off the officers' rations while we were there. So. But anyway, it was very quiet there, and there's very little firing. And at the particular time, I remember I wasn't forward. No, I was on the guns, and I got a carbuncle on the back of my neck, right at the corner, right down there. And I had to come back and go up the line. And I went to a Casby clearing station. I was there a matter of a week. It wasn't ripe enough for lancing. And eventually I got lanced. And I went back to the loss. And they tell us to keep out the line, oh, away from the guns, till they got properly healed up, you know. No, while we were there, there's very little action. And anyway, the thaw set in. And oh, dear me. The trenches, we've been on the guns. I never got read forward where, but we heard about it later. That the trenches all fell in, both sides, the German side. Nobody dare fight. The men, Germans in those, had to get all on top and knock about. But anyway, eventually, the Germans, they'd, unbeknownst to us, they'd made some trenches, new trenches, 2 or 3 miles back. And anyway, we found out that one night, they just cleaned out, and they retreated back to good ground.
It's across the Somme battlefield, was it?
On the Perone front, see? And they went right back out the road into dry trenches, left there. Well, we went in there very long, And then we left there and we went towards Harris. To the, I believe the first place we stopped there would be a name like Gentiles, some name Gentiles. I believe that's the name of the village.
And what month would that be?
And that would be about March end of March or getting on to April of 1917. So. And we didn't know at the time that that was preparing for the Harris battle. So. But anyway, the Harris battle started while we were there. And we got to Ashiecourt. That's where our horse lines was, in front of Harris. And then, as you know, the Harris battle started and we kept firing and progressing up through what's called Neuville-Vitasse and different places there. Eventually we got to Wancourt.
Now you were still a gunner.
And I was still a gunner, see. And it was the day when, I believe when they captured Wancourt Tower. And I was on the goons. And we got Casley's leg, and Billy Williams was wounded, and the brothers was wounded, and we had a sergeant killed, Sergeant Moore, he was killed there. Anyway, there was only three of us on old Gorn left.
What had caused the casualties?
He dropped a shell right close to 5-9, close to see, and we'd just gone in that night, and we were hoping, for, well, when we when it saw daylight, we were in a open field. And our second battery was just behind us, flying out the top of our head. But anyway, during the deal, Captain Tutter, he come up and he says, Call? I says, yes, sir. He says, come on. He says, get out of here. He says, a lot of you. And he says, we know we couldn't keep the going going. So he's short on it. He says, you've been a signaller. Oh, no, I says, I'm a gunner, sir. He says, the man won't be a really gunner. He says, you've been a signaller. So he says, go and report to Sergeant Browell. See? And that was a sergeant signaller. Well, these chaps belong in our left section had spilled the beans about me being a signaller. So they knew, obviously, see? Why, the dead a few casualties with the signallers. So I was roping another officer. Go on, he says, report to Sergeant Browell.
What did you think of that?
Well, you attempted the... So I says, right, oh, sir. So I went and I knew Browley. So I says, right, oh, sir. And I said, I've got to come on. Yes, he says, come on. He says, and he says, a fella, I believe it's Colin Smith. And he says, go on in. He went around, said, oh, repairing a line. And as it happened, I still had the pliers on us. I've not ever shown you them. I still had the same pliers on my front. I says, let's have a drop with a bit of tape, see? And so I got a real insulation tape. I was fully equipped again. And I went away with Smith. And, of course, that was back on the signal, see? And anyway...
Did it worry you because you'd left it because it was a suicide?
No, I didn't leave. It was you know, why it had to be. I was a big believer that you're the fearlessness. You just to be what will be has to be. See? So anyway, and they were all poly like. In fact, some of them had been with the signalman in C-253. In fact, if Billy hadn't been killed, Billy had been there. See? And anyway, I joined up on that. Saying after day two. I was working the dark horse kind of stunt, you know, I said. So Sergeant Brown says, I tell him, he says, well, I'm a bit practice. They says, they went right. So I says, right on. So sat down and he got the instrument and we had the message part and we were writing down and he was buzzing out on the Morse code, of course, saying, buzzing out. He says, say what you like at reading, see. So I was writing it down, and check, I start checking up, see, and course, there were so many mistakes, or the deliberate mistakes, I say. Because I didn't, really, I didn't want to go back to Singapore, say. So, anyway, Brown was reading off on this, somewhere checking up what I'd been sending. He says, go through them again. He says, he started laughing. He says, go through them again, say. So I went through again. Mine, he wasn't checking who it was. He gave me such a look. He's a lovely fella, Brown. He gave me such a look. He said, well, lad, he says, you're a dark horse. I says, oh, that sergeant. He says, do you know? He says, it's funny. Every one of the mistakes you've made on there, he says, is an opposite. Says what? He says, it's an opposite. Why, when they send a letter here, is a dot and a dash. A letter here, and there's a dash and a dot. See? A ho is three dashes. See? S is three dots. See? And I was putting a S for a ho. I was putting a here for a here, and a hell for a half. And say, a U, for a different letter, say. Because there's a lot of letters in alphabet in Morse. They're the opposite, see? Because there's only four syllables, right? So, two dots and two dashes, that's the most of things, see? The other side of one or two or three. And he says, I want, he says, if he opens to read the Morse, and he says, he can think of what the opposite is and put the opposite down. So that finished it, so I said, oh, by right over there. So I stopped on seeing them for the rest of my time. He says, anybody can read Morse and put the opposite down, wasn't there?
Have they got any new equipment in signalling?
No, they're no more, except they've got a new switchboard. And there'll be about, maybe half a dozen different places. And your lines was put on. Line from second battery, line from headquarters, line from headquarters, so and so. And then when they used to give a buzz, it used to sound on one speaker like, and you just had to put a plug in. It was modern then, but it was a crude affair, like say. And that was only, right up to the finish, that was only modern than was then, they say.
Yeah, the same sort of telephones and wires and headphones and everything.
No, they were just the same, exactly the same, they were finishing. And I was there, I was with a single man, right up I was taken prisoner, say. And the remarkable thing was that at that position, we went in that position, I went in as a gunner. See? I was a gunner when I went in, see. And during the course of the action, I was took off gunner and made a signaller. See? And when we were coming out, there was a casualty, one of the drivers got hit. See? And so it said, it was me, close day. Oh, I said, get up there, Cole. You never say, say. Get up there, Cole, he said, in his place, say. Could have been somebody else, say. Get up there, say. So, of course, I got mounted in the AFC. So I went in as a gunner, finished up with a signaller, and come back as a driver.
Where did you go? Can you remember any instance of what happened to you as a signaller?
Well, I'll tell you what happened there at one court. One thing, it was amusing, and yet it was nearly unbelievable. We had a forward gun had come up. That was to the left, see. Mr. Batsy mentioned that when he gave out the recording of the Suresi Raid. And nobody did the forward gun, see. And you weren't allowed to go over the grass anywhere, yet no tracks. And of course, they showed us aerial photographs that old men had took of it. Because it was just behind our trenches, see. And anyway, this line went down, and I went out from the battery to repair it. And I've been out repairing the line, got the line mended, was coming back, and the hair was a lot of powder rate and this in the hair, you know. So. And as I was hurrying back to the battery, We went to there was a gable end of an old farmhouse that had been properly knocked down, see. And there's just a gable end, and like a windowsill there, see. And as I walked past, my eye spotted a spider sitting on the window, see. And I stopped dead, see. It's nearly unbelievable. And I stopped dead. What the hell are you doing there? And I walked across to it. And the poor thing was trembling. And I expected him flying around. Put my hand out, speak to him. It was all about trembling. And anybody see me thought, oh, storm mad, you know. I said, what the hell are you doing here? I said, get away the hell out the road. Come on. And I put my hand. And that bird, you could feel it. It must have been somewhere near a shell, burst or something, see. Anyway, I went with it back to the battery, and when I get in, Growl and others was there, see. And I said, I'm getting a prisoner. He says, what? I said, I'm getting a prisoner. He says, you're getting a pathologist. You're getting a prisoner. I says, aye. He says, well, I says, there. I says, be careful. And I don't know, there's a sparrow there, see. Still alive, aren't they? Where are we getting that? I tell them, see. He will get crumbs and this, that, and that. And we made a rough and ready box. And we'll pour it in. So at the end, we fed it with crumbs and this, that, and that. Then they finish. I said, well, I said, he'll get over his shell shot. Well, then I'm over here. We'll up the way. And we went there, see. And it was, I was flabbergasted to see it sitting there, see. And I went and picked it up. I said, I'm getting a prisoner.